Veritex Community Bank Studios. ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Now bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
What up, A-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Joel, I'm Jeremy. It is a Monday edition of The Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Have a good Thanksgiving?
Quiet, but good. Yeah, family time and all that. How about you?
Very good. Ate a lot. Spent most of the week outside of the city, but good. Brendan, good Thanksgiving?
I mean, spent the year running the Cowboys game. It could have been worse.
Lots of turkey.
Could have been worse if you were a Cowboy fan.
No turkey. Not a turkey fan. I told you
guys.
I
don't understand you.
See, I ate turkey all day Thursday. I ate it for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And then I ate a little bit Friday morning before I left.
I was going to ask you how many times you went back to the... Like, I normally have tried to avoid the next day, but I couldn't. Like, we went to Pleasure Pier on Friday because Lisa had to do a quick trip to check on her dad in California. So Friday we did Pleasure Pier, and I didn't eat all day because I was like, oh, my God, the Thanksgiving meal just crushed me. And so we get back from Pleasure Pier, and the kids are eating Happy Meals. I'm smelling all this food and everything like that. And I was like, and Lisa goes, well, you might as well eat some leftovers. Well, some leftovers turned into just another massive plate in the microwave.
It's the only way to do it.
You got to.
It's the only way to do it. You have to recreate what you had earlier that day. And it was glorious. I had a very good Thanksgiving. I'm thankful for having a good Thanksgiving. And I'm also thankful the Houston Texans lost yesterday. Getting back to their losing ways, how it should be. Texans should not be winning games. They should not be going back-to-back weeks with victories, and they didn't yesterday. They gave us a little bit of a scare, though.
Sure did.
They gave us a bit of a scare. They had the lead in the first half. They had the lead at halftime, but didn't score again in the second half. They did what they were supposed to do. They let the New York Jets and a bad Zach Wilson beat you yesterday, so the Texans able to jump the New York Jets in the 2022 draft order. That's the way it should be.
Mr. Blaylock just took matters into his own hands at one point, going, if you guys think we're going to win this game, let me tell you a little something about what I can do to reverse the fortunes, because the comedy just of errors and just complete missteps by that organization on Kirby continued starting before the game, then with Blacklock and others in the game. And it did, I was worried when they were up after the two touchdowns. I'm going, oh my God, I tweeted out. I said, the over under in this game is 1.5 for how many draft slots you're going to actually slide down if you win this game. And the Texans are looking like they're going to do it. And thankfully, they came to their senses and peed down their leg just enough to lose it.
Yeah, I was watching that game. It's more and more difficult, right? Like, you knew it was going to be bad football going in, so you kind of brace yourself that it's going to be bad ball. And then, like, they kind of blow your mind with how bad the ball actually is. Like, you already expect it to be bad. You go in knowing it's going to be bad, and then you're still surprised at the end of the day how bad it was. Two of the worst teams in the NFL yesterday. I mean, the Texans had Tyrod Taylor throw the ball 26 times, had 158 yards. They couldn't run the football again either. David Johnson was their leading carrier with 39 yards. The Jets were just as bad. Zach Wilson was not very good. He hadn't been very good this year. Is it too early to close the book on Zach Wilson? Yes, absolutely it is. But they're just not a very good team right now. Texans aren't a very good team right now either. And that was a tough one to stomach. Like, I take pride.
He's no Davis Mills. But I mean, you don't shut the door on him. I look at it and I just think before, during, and after. As a Houston sports fan, I always talk about the mirror image right now between your NBA team and your NFL team. But you watch and you just want, look, they may lose the game, but you want them to play the right way, to like show progress, to like think that they're being run the right way. And from start to finish, top to bottom, you're going, no, 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 no. This is like, it's a travesty that these games all have to be on television, because it just magnifies every single time they take the field just what a complete disaster they are.
Yeah. I mean, they're not a well-coached team, which I think is the frustrating thing if you're like a diehard Houston Texan fan, that they're just, you know, whether it's Culley. I do think they're pretty well-coached on the defensive side of the ball. So
yeah,
I want to kind of want to, you know, pump the brakes there a little bit, because defensively, Lovie Smith is getting a lot out of that defense for a lack of talent. Offensively, you can make the case that they might have more talent than they do on the defensive side of the ball, because at least you have Brandon Cooks. At least you have a Tyrod Taylor who's been in the league a while. But the defense is far better where the offense is at. Culley's not a great game manager. Tim Culley's not a very good OC. But the drama really started before the game, too, right? Yeah. With Justin Reed, he was a healthy scratch, and you're wondering, okay, well, that's weird. He was practicing all week. He's not injured at all. And this has been something that's been a theme for the Houston Texans, where a player kind of gets in a little bit of trouble, and they don't play him, whether it's Zach Cunningham, whether it's Lonnie Johnson. We've seen that throughout the Houston Texans this season. So you had a lot of drama before kickoff, before this game ever even started. And to be honest with you, it's the lead story. It's the storyline from yesterday's game. Justin Reed, a healthy scratch for the Houston Texans.
Yeah, and it's a complete embarrassment. And when you initially, when you hear it and see it, it's one thing. And you scratch your temple going, why? And you don't understand it. And then when you start hearing his quotes with Mark Berman, and then you start, you know, going down the rabbit hole a little deeper, and you get a guy that knows him personally, like Ryan Clark, and you start deciphering all of this, and you start going, what the hell are they doing over there? Because, you know, I think the key to me is going to be, if you had a Bradley Roby situation, right? If you're a distraction in the locker room, and you're disruptive to, quote-unquote, culture, and all the things that they're trying to do the right way now with the new regime, then that's one thing. But, you know, if you have just you're asked a question and you give an honest answer, and because there is no volatility, there is no, you know, confrontation or anything like that as far as we've been told, and that's what you want to sit a guy out for and punish a guy for, and especially because he's coming up on free agency. This is the kind of thing that he doesn't forget. Like, even if you wanted to re-sign him, now he's going to go, as long as these guys are here doing this kind of crap to me, I'm out.
That, to me, was the nail in the coffin of Justin Reed's last days of a Houston Texan being close. Now, it was one side of the story. Like, seeing the Justin Reed comments to Mark Berman, seeing what Ryan Clark had to say whenever, you know, he had his little video before the game, and we'll get to all of this into greater detail as we're with you for the next 3 hours. That was the Justin Reed side of the story. And then right. You have David Culley talking post-game that he wants to keep it in-house, wants to keep it internal. He already had his Monday morning press conference earlier today and said, look, it's a situation that we don't feel like it's going to be a distraction. It's a decision we made, and we're going to move on from it. So, to me, you have to kind of pump the brakes a little bit on, you know, we don't know the whole story. We don't know if it got volatile. Right. We don't know if Justin Reed skipped out on a meeting or skipped out on a practice after that. And to be honest with you, like, I'm not concerned about the Houston Texans winning this year, right? Like, I want them to embrace the suck. I want them to get a top pick. I think setting a culture in year one is important. Now, it can be laughable at times with this team because there's not really any players on this team that you expect to be here in 3 years where you want that culture to manifest. And then you also see contradictions of that culture. Like, if your culture is to build for the future and to set the right mantra and to set the tone on where the franchise is going to go, you're also playing Tyrod Taylor whenever you have a young quarterback that you need to find out more about. So, like, I'm okay with sitting him out. I really am. It's just the contradicting things the Texans also do that kind of blows my mind.
Here's what I'm not okay with, Jeremy, is the fact that we always say the truth lays somewhere in the middle, right? Like you said, we heard Justin Reed's side from two different sources, and we want to hear the Texans' side. But what we heard from the Texans was so high road, it was in the Himalayas. So if you try to say it somewhere in the middle, I'm still leaning towards more Team Reed than Team Texans, because if the Texans, no matter what they wanted to keep in-house, were a little bit more adamant about the reasons why they did what they did and at least giving you some kind of a hint as to the fact that, look, this is something we couldn't tolerate or something like that, then I'd say, okay, there is probably some common ground in the middle where they both were at fault. But because they took it so high to the high road and he was pretty much on point with what he said, specifics to the detail of it was in a meeting, it was with the coaching staff, it wasn't physical, it wasn't, you know, all these other things. And then Ryan Clark, his mouthpiece, who he has a relationship with, comes out and basically just gives you almost verbatim the same answer and also more detail. That's where I'd say, okay, I don't think it lies in the middle here. And I will, from what I've seen so far, I side with Justin Reed. Not because I'm anti-Texan, but because if the Texans were really firm in their beliefs too, they would have given you a little bit more than what they gave you.
I also feel like it's going to be the Texan way, though, right? Like, the culture is very similar to what they try to do in New England, because you have Nick Caserio, who is a New England guy. You have Jack Easterby, and I hate muttering those words, who is a New England guy. And if you take a page and you look at them as the evidence of how the Houston Texans are trying to build a culture, this is no different than what Bill Belichick would do. Belichick's not going to throw his player under the bus. He's not going to give you any sort of information. Now, a player might get outspoken and a player might say something and he might go out and leak it to Ryan Clark or leak it to whoever. But Belichick's not going to say anything. Patriots aren't going to say anything. And to me, the Texans have been consistent in that regard in terms of, okay, they might not like what a player is doing. Maybe a player broke a rule, or maybe a player got loud in the locker room. And the Texans, knowing that it's a season in which they're not going to win a whole lot of games, it's about establishing that culture and laying the foundation of what they want to be. And you can argue if the culture's wise, and you can argue is culture more important than winning in year one, and you can argue that the foundation that they're laying is not the proper foundation that they're having. But I do feel that the Texans have been consistent with players whenever they break a team rule or they do something in the locker room or a practice that's not acceptable. They've been pretty status quo with this.
But to my point, and take the Bradley Roby situation again, there were instances that came out. There was examples given. There was backup given by players and sources in terms of the locker room, the play, just different scenarios in which it was building. It was adding up. So it added up and made sense to make the move that they made. Here, we'll see if there's more to come out at a certain point. But the way they handled it, Belichick, because he's so much more highly respected compared to the first-time guys you have in position here, that they wouldn't probably do this anyway. But I think that Belichick also, and maybe I'm wrong, but no matter what comes out publicly or what they would do, I would think that the Patriots under Bill Belichick would welcome honesty from their players. Just know it's not getting out to the media. It's not something that we're going to go outward with. But if we want you to give us your feelings, understand that it may be something we don't go with because we believe something totally different, but we would like you to have that open dialogue. To me, it almost sounds like they don't want open dialogue with their players, and that's troublesome.
If that is true, that is a huge problem because you should have the open dialogue, especially from a player who's a leader on the defensive side that at least has a voice that resonates in that locker room, is one of the best players on the defensive side of the ball too. And they did that earlier this year with Zach Cunningham as well. Zach Cunningham he had the green dot last year, one of the best leading tacklers in the NFL the previous couple of seasons, and then they kind of silenced him a little bit and went that route too. See, I relate this a little bit to the Texas situation, where what's more important in year one, the culture or winning games? And Steve Sarkisian, he flat out said, look, I mean, he didn't say this, but his actions tell you that he's more concerned about fixing the culture at Texas than going 7-5 in year one, and he's willing to sacrifice a couple of victories in year one, whether it's the Moore kid at receiver who he kicked off the team, whether it's his offensive line coach yelling at the team on the bus. And I feel like the Texans are trying to do the same thing. Now, you can argue if they're going about it the right way, but I have no problem with Justin Reed as a healthy scratch. Because me, in year one, I'm valuing culture versus winning an extra game or two over the NFL season. I feel like that's something that you need to establish. The question and the trouble that I have, and it's a little bit of a worrisome, is that message really being received, one, and then two, that culture that you're building, who's going to be around for it?
Right. Well, that's the key. The other thing that you kind of look at is every time they have a problem with culture, with the exception of maybe Brandon Cooks, your best players are the ones that you're questioning if they get the culture or not.
Yeah.
So basically, what good is it if all the guys that get your culture and follow your mantra are the guys that are second stringers or just happy to be in an NFL locker room as opposed to guys that make a difference? And the other thing that was kind of a head scratcher to me, but I think he might be right, but you know, my boy Randy McAvoy goes on TV last night and says, the face of the franchise, Justin Reed. And when you think about it, you wouldn't think Justin Reed's the face of the franchise. Now, he's a guy that you know he's in the community. He's done some things. But based on what this roster isn't, aside from Tyrod Taylor, he is.
It depends on the angle you take from it. From a fan perspective, probably.
Right.
From, like, what the Texans brass wanted to be, they wanted to be Nick Caserio. They want Nick Caserio to be the face of the
probably
franchise.
Probably right. And you know what? And then the other thing that I just kept thinking about, too, with all the good that Justin Reed has been about in the community and on the field since he's been here, why wouldn't you just do it where, okay, you're not starting today, and I might sit you for the first quarter. But if there wasn't anything that was volatile, that was physical, that was that big of a deal, you were going to have him miss the entire game? I get you sending a message, but you can send that message without sending it to the point where...
But they don't care about winning.
But you also don't care about Justin Reed in your future. That's obvious.
Yeah. I mean, he's gone. There's no... Like, we're on two different sides of this, and we agree the one thing, Justin Reed's done.
That's it.
As a Houston Texan.
You sealed the deal with the way you handled this right here.
No doubt about it. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-ESPN. If you want to get in, we're on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. He's a Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. I'm at Jeremy Branham. We can discuss this. Also, we'll go around the NFL with some of the bigger games yesterday. Who made a statement around the National Football League? That's next. Killer Bees on ESPN975 and ESPN925.
Your home for sports. ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports. Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Now Jones works from the gun on a third down and six from the Tennessee 41. Ball splits the hash marks in a 2x2 set. Jones is back in the pocket, throws down the middle, caught by Bourne, running room to the outside as he carries to the 30.
Oh,
then he's down the sideline, it's 15, away from a defender, into the end zone.
Touchdown.
Bourne to run after the catch. Touchdown, Patriots.
98.5, the Sports Hub. Patriots rolling the Titans 36-13. Grade the call. Grade the call.
It wasn't bad.
It wasn't bad. I'm giving it a solid 7.
Yeah, I will go with that. And the only reason why I won't go higher is because of the Patriots.
Oh, why the hate against the
Patriots?
Because
I've always hated the Patriots. Why change now? I got to stay true to who I am.
They're rallying. They're rolling. Patriots are red hot.
Jeremy, are they the best team in the AFC?
You know what? I did that thought entered my mind yesterday because, look, the AFC, I've been saying for a while now that I don't feel like there's a great team in the AFC. I still feel like the highest ceiling team in the AFC is the Chiefs, yep. But that defense worries me, although they've been playing better lately. I've been saying for a while now that the Titans were a fraud ever since they lost Derrick Henry. Then they lost to the Texans at home. That was the sign for sure that the Titans weren't a dominating team. The Ravens looked awful yesterday in Sunday Night Football in victory. Now the defense looked very good. I'm going to give it a hard maybe that the Patriots are the best team in the AFC. Hard maybe. I'm Brendan shaking his head with me.
I still believe in Kansas City at the end of the year being the best team in the AFC. But for right now, it's hard to argue the fact that the Patriots are playing the best football and they're the team that no one expected to be there. A rookie quarterback, and we've talked ad nauseum about all the rookie quarterbacks and their shortcomings and, you know, no matter how high their ceiling is and what the potential is, how far they have to go. The fact that last year when Bill Belichick had all the egg in the world on his face because Tom Brady won the Super Bowl and he won it without them, you know, without being around Bill, and then it was who got more credit for the dynasty in New England. Well, what a bounce back year for Bill Belichick and the Patriots on both sides of the football. They spent the money where they had to defensively to get veterans that can anchor the fort. And then offensively, Mac Jones is the poorest, youngest version of Tom Brady you ever could have expected because he just fit right in to do the exact same kind of things. And granted, I'm not saying he's Tom Brady, but he's Tom Brady-esque in the fact that he doesn't look athletic. We know what Brady looked like at the combine. We know that Mac Jones looked similar, but we know that Mac Jones does a lot of the same things. He's smart. He's heady. He makes the right read, the right call, gets the ball out of his hands quickly, and the Patriots are a well-oiled machine right now.
He's an early Tom Brady, right?
Yeah,
he was Tom Brady early in his career where he wasn't, like, lighting up the fantasy numbers, but throwing lots of touchdowns, protecting the ball. And, of course, Bill Belichick, after 6 straight wins, he's just over the moon about it.
Bill, one of the mantras we've heard coming out of the locker room and from players over the years is football season starts after Thanksgiving. Is this team coming together in this sort of win, sort of establish where you want to be heading down the stretch towards the final months?
Yeah, I don't know. Play Buffalo on Monday night, we'll see. Eight games isn't enough to clinch anything or win anything, so we got a long way to go.
Bill Belichick pumped up after the 36-13 drubbing of the Tennessee Titans.
Who they play next? Because I'm surprised Buffalo. You didn't finish with Buffalo. We're on to Buffalo.
Which, by the way, good test in the AFC to see who's one of the upper echelon teams in the AFC. Belichick couldn't be happier. Over to Lambeau Field with the Packers. Did you say wait?
Wait, we're going to Lambeau Field. Are they any good?
They're pretty good. 9-3 now after beating the Rams 36-28. Aaron Rodgers, broken toe, not phasing him. Says he fractured it during a workout during quarantine. That's all right. He's still expected to play very well, right?
Now, look, when I step on the field, I expect greatness. I think anyone who's a great competitor feels the same way. So, you know, I don't lean on excuses and not practicing, little toe injury. You know, I expect greatness when I take the field.
Aaron Rodgers to the point of his career now where he's going to say anything that he wants.
Like
he's like at the 70-year-old old man spot wherever you're just going to say whatever the heck you want to because no, you don't care because you're 70 and about to die. I feel like Rodgers knows his NFL career is going to be over in the next 3 to 5 seasons. He's saying whatever he wants and doing whatever he wants.
When you have the confidence to throw your digits at a press conference up on the table to show you the toe, barefoot, then you know you don't give a rat's ass about anything else. But if he keeps playing like he's playing, And Green Bay is absolutely, and again, I'm going to go back and just reiterate. I said he was never going anywhere. I said he would be back this year when everybody was adamant he wouldn't. Green Bay has every single reason now to make sure they never let that guy play in another uniform, because the throws that were dropped yesterday were unbelievable. The way he can lead a team, digit bad or not. And I will say this, late in the game, that toe, whatever they shot it up before the game, it wore off. And suddenly he was limping, and then he got hit a couple of times. And it's like, he's going in for more tests this morning. They may do surgery this afternoon and hope it heals because they're in the bye week. But the key to me, guys, the defense and the way they're playing, and then you took your third-string offensive line, and you handled the quote-unquote Hall of Fame headed to the Super Bowl defense of the Rams, Jalen Ramsey and Aaron Donald, frustrated them all day long. And they found themselves the perfect running back for Green Bay again in A.J. Dillon. They don't need Aaron Jones trying to cut and move in the snow. They need a guy that's a bulldozer. He moves people.
Yeah, he's really good. You catch all the shade that Joe Buck was throwing Aaron Rodgers' way. There's two cuts we're going to get to. Here's the first one.
53 yards from Hecker. Here comes Mr. Bad Toe out to play. No score.
Mr. Bad Toe from Joe Buck.
I'm on my way to the bathroom because it's a commercial to take a quick leak. And I hear that, and I go, this from Mr. Bad Hair that's going to go out and do his little, you know, Joe Buck's a pain in the ass.
8 hair replacements, by the way. I was listening to him on, what's that show? It's a podcast with Jason Bateman. I think it's called, I forget, but I was in the car with my wife. We listened to the podcast. We turned it on Joe Buck, and he talked about he had 8 different
he was obsessed.
Hair surgeries, and one of them, like, ruined his vocal cords. Because they stuck the anesthesia down his throat and it rested on his vocal cords for a 6-hour hair procedure. It ruined his vocal cords for about a year. Now, that one, Mr. Bad Toe, whatever, just a cheesy joke. Yeah, just a year.
Damn it.
Anyways, you know, Mr. Bad Toe, that's just a cheesy joke from Joe Buck. How about this one from Joe Buck later?
So Aaron is telling us that he's had that toe immunized against the pain. As a catch is made and lunging for the first down is Marquez Valdes-Scantling.
Look, you and I both have been on broadcast for games. You should never be the show. I don't care how good you are.
It's like
never
the officials.
Be the show.
It's like I say about the officials. We don't need to know them by name. If we do, there's a reason why it's normally a negative. Yeah, it ain't about you. It's about you delivering the message and the information about who it's really about. It's them. And so, yeah, that's why he annoys me. That's why I have the Shut the Buck Up shirt that I wear around the house and all over the place that was given to me by an Astros fan. And he annoys me. Just like Troy Aikman saying they were trying to have the 8 different names for what they call a ski hat or a stocking cap. And then Troy said, well, I know I'll never wear one. Yeah, because aside from Jack in the Box, you can't find one that could fit your head.
Well, that seemed like a cheap shot at Troy Aikman. I don't know why Troy Aikman deserved a cheap shot because he doesn't know what a beanie is. That seems like a bit much.
No, the fact that he wouldn't. Troy's never. Don't get me started.
I'm not a big Buck guy. Smartless is the podcast, by the way. It's just Buck talking about himself for 60 minutes. Wasn't great. Third straight loss, though, for the Rams. And Sean McVay, who's not always the most angry guy after games, started to tilt a little bit after the loss.
What do you listen? We this is a team game, all right. I'm not interested in revisiting the past and some of the things that haven't always gone the way that we wanted to. There's a lot of different snaps. There's a lot of things that he's done at a high level. When you want to just isolate those individual plays, of course we want to be able to play better. It's not always exclusively on him. We got a guy that's got great ownership. I got great confidence in this guy, and I'm not going to sit here and criticize our players. I'm going to be able to look at it, try to say, hey, here's where we can fix it. Here's where we can correct it, and that's where I feel like my job is as a coach. I don't mean to get upset, but I'm not, you know, this is a very important thing to all of us. I have total confidence and belief in Matthew Stafford, and I think the narrative, you know, when everybody wants to throw out 6 turnovers, all of those have a totally different story, and not all of those are his fault.
Every interception has a story, that line again. I love Sean McVay. I know that he's wearing it right now. 3 straight losses. People are saying that he's a little too cute for his own good, too smart for his own good. Even when he gets mad at a reporter, he apologizes before the question's even over. Before he finishes answering, he apologizes to the reporter. I like Sean McVay.
He's a good dude, smart coach. Offensive innovator, hot wife or girlfriend or fiance, but yeah, he's killing it. Chunky soup commercials, funny. I'll give it all that.
And
you know what? And the funny thing was, I don't know if you guys caught this or not, but OBJ hit up Davante Adams before the game and said, after the game, I want to do a jersey switch. And Davante Adams' first response was, why don't you do one with Cooper Kupp? You picked him over me. You picked them over us.
That was funny.
That was fantastic. fantastic.
I like Devontae Adams, too. He's a good player.
713-780-ESPN,
713-780-3776. Rockets are rolling. Back-to-back victories, and now they're running into a wall. That's next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. Razor-sharp commentaries delivered with a purpose. You found the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Rockets are red hot. Back-to-back wins for your Houston Rockets. They can make it three in a row tonight. They have a very real chance to make it three in a row tonight. I haven't looked at the spread on this one yet, but they're home for the Oklahoma City Thunder, and they're favored by 2 points. The Rockets are expected to make it three in a row tonight. Watch out. What is it? Liftoff? Ignite?
Light the fuse, buddy.
Light the fuse.
Light the fuse.
They're all synonymous with each other.
Yeah, light the fuse.
First time the charm.
Okay, so let's play, because I'm going to be unpopular here for a second. I know that's not shocking to anybody. Let's play what, so any kind of coincidence, okay? Which one of these things just doesn't belong right now? So the Rockets have won two in a row.
Okay.
And they won both of those games where I don't think Daniel Theis is a guy that you would think is a franchise player, right?
I wouldn't.
Okay, so he wasn't in the starting lineup. Other than that, what was the major glaring difference between all the losses and the last two wins?
No Jalen Green.
Oh. Then the fact that the ball was moving. They were hitting the open man. There was balance. Everybody was scoring. Everyone was touching it. Then, and maybe it was because they were on football overload or the tryptophan had hit them from the turkey still. But in the post game, not one, not two, but three different people spoke, in which all three referenced when they were asked why the winning streak, why the success. Well, the ball didn't get sticky. Not one guy was caught isolating. The ball moved. They found the open man. They did everything they needed to do. Scratch your temple for a second if you're not anybody named Joel Blank. Anybody see a coincidence between what we just talked about and then those comments? Jalen Green might have a lesson or two to learn about playing team basketball, gang. Don't anoint the guy the next Kobe Bryant just yet. He's young. He's got to make some adjustments himself. The reason why this team's playing better is Jalen Green isn't just a vacuum of Jalen Green on the isolation ball, and they're sharing the ball. They're getting other guys involved. They got shooters. Suddenly, your boy is a freaking zone buster.
Sweet shooting Armani Brooks.
Yep. And this kid Matthews.
Where did he come from?
Out of nowhere. And he's got hops, but he's making shots. Look, you could see it in Silas's face in the post game too. This is the way he wants them to play offensively. He doesn't want the ISO ball.
Yeah. Who called him Kobe Bryant, Bill?
Oh, coming out, there were multiple people when they were doing their draft analysis and everything like that saying that he had the talent to be the next Kobe Bryant.
Yeah, I know that like he said that he wanted to be compared to Kobe, but there was other people actually saying
that.
Oh,
yeah.
That's not fair to Jalen Green. That's not fair to Jalen. Let's say calling Chet Holmgren Kevin Durant.
But he just said he wanted it too.
Yeah, he did. I mean, he wanted all the smoke, right?
So you're asking for it.
Yeah, he wanted all the smoke. Look, but what do you want him to do? Like, what do you want the Rockets to do? He is the future of the franchise. He's the number two pick. He is your biggest commodity. So, I mean, what do you want Jalen Green to do? What do you want the Rockets to do with Jalen Green?
I want him to learn. Right? I want him to learn. I want him to learn and see why when he's not in the lineup and the team is winning, why that's happening. I want him to understand that you're still going to get yours. And the baskets are going to come for you if you just play the right way. Play within the system. You know exactly what I'm talking about. And with Kelvin, he's a guy that preaches the same kind of thing. The other thing that I think, Jeremy, they got to take a hard look at is they want this to be the backcourt of the future. Why? Because both guys are talented. But KPJ is better suited for that two-guard role where he can facilitate when he wants to, but he can still do what he needs to do within the team game, because he still was passing the ball. He passed the ball way more in the role he was in Saturday night than he ever would have been in the point guard position. Neither one of those guys is a point guard, and that's something the Rockets are going to have to come to grips with. I could see moving one. If you want to move Green to the three
and get
a real point guard, you're in better shape. Now, that real point guard can't be a veteran making $45 million a year because he wants to be free.
I can't imagine who you're talking about.
Hmm.
John Wall?
Hashtag.
John Wall's not the guy?
Hashtag free Wall.
Yeah, that's what he posted on Instagram the other day when news came out that he wanted a chance to play and earn his starting job back. Look, Like, if like I get John Wall's point of view. Like, he doesn't want to take a pay cut, which I get. Doesn't want to take a buyout. I get. Like, if I was on the hook for over $40 million for the next two seasons, I wouldn't want to take a pay cut, right? But I also would want to play. I'd want to be on a better team. So it's kind of, let's sit at the table and come to terms on a deal. Now, I believe that John Wall's probably going to get the Players Association involved at some point where he's going to force the Rockets to suit him up on game nights. That doesn't mean the Rockets have to play him, though. That doesn't mean the Rockets have to use him and use him for minutes. Yeah, hey, you want to dress? That's great. Sit at the end of the bench. And I think the Rockets are willing to play hardball here with John Wall.
You said the exact right word, Jeremy. If he was willing to earn his starting job back and earn those minutes, then maybe from a Rockets administrative position, whether it be the coach or the general manager or both, could say, hey, look, maybe John starts at the one and we do what we just talked about, put KPJ at the two, put Green at the three. Quickest first three in maybe all the NBA, and you get a true veteran point guard. As long as John doesn't play selfish, worried about John. The one thing that's annoyingly amusing to me about his hashtag is nothing's free about $45 million a year unless you're sitting in a beach hat watching the games, because that's the freest you can get. But if you want to play and you want to still get paid, there's nothing free. You just have to earn your stripes back because you wanted to be away from this team. So I don't think that you can go back to the whole mentality you had previous to when Harden was traded and you said, with Harden gone, this is my franchise, this is my team. Well, that's before you alienated them and went AWOL and said, I'm done. I don't want to play here. I want to play somewhere else, but I still want those checks on the 1st or the 15th. You want to come back and play? You play by their rules, not yours.
To me, it can work. It can be a situation where it works for both parties, because maybe the situation that you're talking about, maybe it's just minutes off the bench, and then maybe he showcases enough to where you can trade him, or somebody's willing to, you know, nothing significant, but maybe you can trade somebody else's bad contract, but a cheaper bad contract for a John Wall. Like, it can work in both parties, but John Wall not playing isn't really showcasing him to the rest of the league. So I feel like they can come together here. Now, the Rockets have been, I think, playing hardball with John Wall a bit. Like, hey, this isn't your team. You're not a building block of this team. We're building around these young guys. And until John Wall can accept that, if I'm the Rockets, I don't play him.
That's the thing that it's frustrating to me. Like, you can't have it both ways. You can have your $45 million and you can somehow, some way, because they decided to appease you, which I will never understand, and say you don't have to play to get it. That if you want a 180 and you want a redo, then you can't set the parameters. I get it, James Harden
exactly
set the bad precedent of, I can tell you at any time who I want to be traded to and that I want to be traded. You just need to facilitate me. And other than that, no franchise in the history of sports should be the one that says, with your name on that dotted line for that many years at that dollar figure, you don't get to call the shots. But because they did it for Harden, Wall suddenly thinks they can do it for him too. And then because they let him sit out and collect his checks, they continued that bad precedent. But now if you want to come back and play, and you also probably see what we've seen, that there's an opening for him to make a difference. Plus, teams need the whole Janet Jackson thing, right? They might be interested, the Clippers and otherwise, Philly, might be interested in trading for him. They don't care what they saw in the summer. They got to know you can still go and you can still perform the way they need you to. So there's a lot of give and take that goes on here. But if you come in guns blazing that I got to start and I got to do this and I got to do that, I ain't got time for that, because what we saw in the last two games is the first glimmer of hope that these guys are getting better.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Elsewhere in the NBA, Golden State and Phoenix are both red hot. Warriors have won seven in a row. The best team in the West. Suns are right there on their tails, though. 16 in a row for Phoenix. It very much looks like those two teams are the cream of the crop in the Western Conference. Lakers, meanwhile, kind of struggling to this point. Like, if the playoffs were to start today, and they're nowhere near close to starting, they have the sixth best record in the Western Conference right now.
Well, and I said it the preseason to you, the AARP team is not based on a resume. These guys aren't playing this year's roster on their best season on their resume, because if you got them in their prime, that would be a great roster. Mm-hmm. But the fact that the majority of them are closer to retirement than they are their heyday, and they're relying on what the chemistry that just isn't there between Russell Westbrook and his new teammates. Something's going to have to give, because they're old and they're not doing it. And this is not one of those flip the switch and be ready at the right time and you can beat anybody. This, because even LeBron is older than he was and he's not the same player. The Lakers look to be has-beens instead of guys that are on their way to being, you know, contenders again. Phoenix, to me, still, if everybody's healthy in the West, I don't see it. But, boy, Golden State is even better than I thought. I thought they were a top-four team at the start of the year. But Jordan Poole has been fantastic. Ugh. And then you get Klay Thompson back. He's in the G League right now. And you just
Wiseman,
you know,
too.
Yeah, and Wiseman's coming back. And you start thinking about, well, they have a starting five, but what do they have for a bench? That was the knock on them coming into the season, even when they got healthy. Now you look at it and go, well, if you can bring Poole off the bench and you can bring Wiseman off the bench and you can have depth off the bench like they have, some of the other guys, the younger players they have, you're like, Golden State looks like they're not only for real, but they should be the favorite to win it all, especially with the fact that Brooklyn doesn't have Kyrie.
No, Golden State's legit. I like Phoenix. I like the way that that team is constructed, too. Now, are they good enough to get by Golden State? Probably not. And the Lakers, to me, are the Lakers you saw back in the mid-90s when they brought in, like, Malone and Payton. I guess that was longer than the mid-90s. But, yeah, just an old team that struggles through the regular season, hope to get hot at the end. Like, to me, too, if you're the Lakers, you need to have a better regular season because you want to, like, lighten the load for LeBron James so he's not gassed by the postseason. He's having to log heavy minutes because the Lakers are just competitive with every team in the NBA. The fact that they can't win without LeBron James on the floor, I mean, LeBron's going to be gassed by the time the playoffs come around.
Yeah, he had 33, and they barely beat the Pistons yesterday. Sorry, Brendan. But at the same time, when you look at it, to your point, he should be resting. They should have a talent pool with enough that, and the way that Rob Pelinka should have constructed this team, that if he did need those nights off like they've given him in the past, even though, you know, it annoyed the fans on the road because they didn't get to see LeBron, you know what? You nurtured his minutes until he was ready for the playoffs at the most important time of the year. He's got to carry them right now. And then you start, the one thing that was just mind-boggling to me too is I saw some of the rumor mills, and they said, in terms of John Wall to the Lakers for Russell Westbrook. Well, holy full circle if the Rockets would even consider that and take Russ back.
What's his contract, though?
They're almost identical. That's why they were able to make the move they made with Washington.
You're right, but in terms of length. Like, I don't care if it's the same dollar per year. Like, Russell Westbrook is signed.
He's got one more.
One more year. Yeah. So it was a two-year deal. But, like, trading Russell Westbrook for John Wall added 2 years of being in cap hell. Like, it was a bad deal at the beginning. Like, now, I mean, whatever. It's a bad contract for a bad contract. Two players that aren't going to get you anywhere. So that trade doesn't make a whole lot of sense for me if I'm a Rocket.
It doesn't. And you know what? And the other thing that was interesting to me, too, was because I said Rafael Stone basically got Tommy Shepard, the GM of the Wizards, an extension because he got zero and took a problem off his hands in John Wall for Russ. And then Tommy turned Russ into three starters and two draft picks from the Lakers. And now the Wiz have one of the best records in the Eastern Conference overnight because someone took the hot garbage that no one thought they could get rid of in that deadly contract of John Wall. So now you're looking at it going, well, would Russ go back? Well, people forget, and this is one thing they don't know. The reason why Russ left Houston was partly because of the way James was coddled.
Yeah.
And also partly because he couldn't stand Rafael Stone, and he knew Rafael Stone as Daryl's assistant. When he found out Rafael Stone was taking over the team, he was like, last straw for me, guys. I'm out. And that's why he was the first one traded. So I don't think he would come back. And I think that's something that, you know, you have to look at too, going, now you know what you have, and you have a problem on your hands with John Wall. Because this is going to be a situation. It was fine when he wasn't saying anything to the media and he was just being a good soldier and collecting his checks. Now, with these social media plays on top of the fact that they're meeting multiple times and can't come to a common ground, it's going to be a bigger problem. It's going to keep building, and it could be disastrous for the franchise.
No doubt about it. 713-780-ESPN. Coming up next, Jake Crane from the J Boy Show podcast for the Volume Sports. He'll be joining us to talk about what was a big weekend in college football, both on the field and off the field. That's next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Very excited to welcome in our guest on the HR&P guest line, Jake Crane of the J-Boy Show podcast for the Volume Sports joining us. Thanks for coming on, Jake. Jake, this Lincoln Riley news, man, out of left field, how did they cover this up?
Jake? Technology. Number one, I appreciate you guys having me on, but nowadays with technology, you know, it's harder to cover things up. You know, when you look at this whole situation with Lincoln Riley, and about a week and a half ago, we reported that LSU had made an offer, not that he had accepted it, but LSU had made an offer, and whenever you hear something like that, especially from somebody that you trust, you know if they made an offer, then he's listening. I believe there are multiple suitors here. I think there are a lot of people at LSU that were surprised in the higher-up that Lincoln Riley ended up going to USC. It's funny, you know, you look at non-denial denials. I don't know what you call saying, hey, I'm not going to be the next head coach at LSU. He didn't say he wasn't going to be the next coach at USC, so I guess he had his words carefully there. I'm interested to see the contract details. But to me, you know, the biggest question people are going to ask is Lincoln Riley ducking the SEC? If you don't want to stay at Oklahoma, who's going into the conference, and you don't want to go to LSU, who's already in the conference, what are you running from the SEC? And to me, and it's what I'm going to talk about on our show today, we go live at 2 Central, is there's really two trains of thought here. One, some head coaches want to compete in the best league against the best coaches to see. I think it's hard not to argue that the SEC is the best conference. It's got the best coaches. You look at Nick Saban, you look at Kirby Smart, just look at the numbers in the draft. And some guys can't lay their head on the pillow at night when they get done if they didn't know. Now, Oklahoma is at a place where you can win a national championship, but every time they get close to the door, they get it slammed in their face by an SEC team. It's typically been by a high score. But there's another train of thought that with the playoff probably moving to 12, you look at the Pac-12, Oregon's really been running shop out there. Obviously, Utah beat them earlier, and they're going to play again. But in aggregate, Oregon's kind of ran it. And in the 12-team playoff, it seems to be that it'd be an easier path to get to that playoff at USC than LSU, some could argue. So I think he went with, you know, I guess what he would consider the lesser of two evils when he left. Now, look, you got to understand, too, the timing of this with in-home visits and stuff leaves Oklahoma in a horrible place. You've seen Spencer Rattler enter the portal. And some commit flip. Not shocked on Spencer, but Caleb Williams is the one I'd worry about, to be honest with you. So, you know, keeping it suppressed is an unbelievable job by them doing it. But, you know, I think there were multiple suitors here.
Well, Jake, we appreciate you, man, but we're going to have to tell you that they're going to listen to the podcast because from 2 to 3, we're still on the air for an hour, and the Killer Bees are alive in the hive, and then they're going to get to your podcast.
Of course. Well, we restream it, so it's on YouTube and Apple Podcasts forever and Spotify.
Yeah, so it's a family thing. We're going to keep it all in the family. They're going to catch all of it.
Exactly.
Now, let me ask you this on the same subject but from a different angle. When we started talking about with Coach O and the news got out at LSU, we thought that was the most attractive job in the country. Now, suddenly, it looks like their first and second options, whether you believe the Jimbo stuff or not, but multiple options are off the table. What is keeping everybody away from the LSU job?
Well, you know, I always try and take these things circumstantially because, you know, the lay of the land is always different in coaching searches. You know, 2 months ago, you'd have looked out in the field and when it comes to, you know, supply and demand for coaches and said there's a whole lot more out there than there was before they hired Ed Orgeron with all the Tom Herman stuff and stuff going out there. But now you look at it, and the supply does not meet the demand, and they're not alone. Now, look, LSU is a top 5 job in the country for multiple reasons. Location, you're in a state that produces NFL talent at a very high level, and you don't have a state school to worry about. Kids aren't spurning LSU for Tulane and McNeese State. Right. It really recruits itself. Now, you got to go outside the state most of the time to get linemen, especially offensive linemen. But, you know, LSU, they've got the Title IX stuff kind of hanging over them, but I don't think it's that big of a factor. I think with LSU right now, people are looking at Nick Saban. They're looking at the West. They're looking at what Jimbo's building, even though LSU did just beat A&M. And they're saying, what's the easiest path for me to get to the 12? And some coaches are going to say, you know, I'm not worried about the easiest path. I want to know if I can do it in the SEC against the big dogs. And then other coaches that say, why would I put myself and my family at risk of getting fired when I can go to another place, have, you know, success and have a better chance of making the playoff per se. Now, that doesn't mean that you can't lose 2 games at LSU and make the playoff to 12. You can. You've got cachet there. But it's really preference for me. I don't think it's as much as LSU or them looking at one particular thing and saying, no, I don't want that job. I think they're looking at the lay of the land. But I'll tell you this. LSU's going to get a good coach. Scott Woodward is known worldwide for pulling rabbits out of the hat, keeping things low-key, and making a big splash higher. So I wouldn't write LSU off just yet, and it may be a name that nobody's heard yet.
I think one of the keys to that, too, is joining us Jake Crane from the J-Boy Show podcast for the Volume Sports. Like, Billy Napier would seem like an obvious, you know, just go right down the road to Lafayette. You bring him to Baton Rouge. He's had success there at Louisiana. He's in the circles there of the high school coaches very well. Mm-hmm. And it didn't even seem like they talked to him at all. He went off to Florida. So it seems like that's a clue that LSU may already have somebody in mind. What do you think of the Napier hire, though, there for Florida?
I think it's a good hire. Number one, Billy's earned it. I mean, Billy's built up a ton of equity there. You know, he's had chances to take other jobs. He was waiting for one that he felt right, and he deserves a shot. He deserves a shot at a place like Florida where you can win. The thing about Coach Napier is he's very organized. he's very competitive and he's very genuine. That's why he's going to be able to recruit well. I mean, Porter recruits himself, but he is a guy that is a program builder. He understands how to play the game. And there's a lot more that went into, in my opinion, LSU not talking to him. There is a political angle. I know a lot of LSU fans that didn't want to sign the coach from Lafayette, because all the Lafayette fans, if he had success, would say, you're welcome, and look at little brother helping out big brother. Some of the same stuff we heard last year with the Auburn search with Bill Clark at UAB. That's just something that a lot of states, it may sound apropos, but it's a real thing. I think that might have kept them away. And then what you mentioned with Scott having a guy in mind, having a couple targets, or maybe having a guy in the bag as well. But I think Billy's going to do a great job. I think it was a smart move by Scott Strickland. He's got a guy that's very well respected in the coaching community, and I think Billy will turn that place around pretty quick.
All right, Jake, I got to ask you, is it just clickbait-hungry people, and will remain nameless, that Cliff Kingsbury would even be considering a college job? Or is it Cliff's agent calling and going, you know what, we got a way to get you even more money to stay right where you're at?
Yeah, this one smells funny. I don't see Cliff Kingsbury, who didn't exactly light it up at Texas Tech, goes to the NFL and having a ton of success, wanting to go back. I think there'd be a better chance of Matt Rhule leaving the NFL than there is of Cliff Kingsbury. Oh. I think that was just the leverage move. You know, you put the wood under the rock to help lift it easier and get that contract and whatever it is to bump the price up. You know how that goes, and Adam Schefter's one of the best in the world at it.
Yeah, I mean, because to me, Urban Meyer would be the guy that goes, this isn't what I thought it was going to be, and I'm looking to get out, as opposed to a guy like Kingsbury sitting on top of the world with the best record in the NFC right now.
Yeah, well, you know, speaking of Urban, I'm wondering when he's going to hire Mullen as the OC at the Jaguars.
Wow. Yeah, that's something to think about. Jake Crane joining us on the HR&P guest line. Being in Texas, I've seen some people, TCU fans, who are kind of wondering why they ran off a surefire Hall of Fame coach for Sonny Dykes, who 71-63 over the course of his career, 8 wins, 7 wins last 2 seasons at SMU. TCU doing the right thing here?
You know, I think it was time for a change. I didn't like the way they handled it. I don't know why you don't let him finish out the season. I mean, 20 years is a long time, and he's given that program a lot. It's gotten a little stale over the past couple years. They haven't been winning like they expect to, but I didn't like the way they handled it. I don't think it was crazy making the decision to part ways, but once again, I think there's a right way to do it and a wrong way to do it. I was glad that Gary said, I'm not sticking around then. Y'all want me gone? Then I'm gone. Y'all can do the rest. But I like the Sonny Dykes hire. You look at what SMU was able to do. They're down their top 2 receivers against Cincinnati. He's been able to consistently win there. He knows the high school coaching ranks, the lay of the land. So I like it. I think it's a good move bringing Garrett Riley with him as well, who's a name that's going to continue to get hotter and hotter. So I like the move. I didn't like the way it was handled, though.
All right, Jake, because we're in Houston, because there's bad blood, there's hard feelings, and then there's Bill O'Brien. Is Bill O'Brien going to end up with a head coaching job after 1 year as the OC at Alabama in a really, really disastrous, in a lot of ways, offensive year for Alabama in terms of the play calling? Is Bill O'Brien, after less than a year with Nick Saban, is he going to end up with a head coaching job in college football?
Well, you know, nothing ever surprises me with coaches that go to the Nick Saban rehabilitation clinic tend to get out and thrive. I wouldn't be surprised if he got a job, but, you know, his cachet has really fallen off a lot this year. You know, his name was really hot at the beginning of the year. Alabama, you know, they lost a ton. I don't think his play calling's been stellar at all. Now, they don't typically have what they've had in the past. But, you know, Bill O'Brien, you get 1 year in and you're at Alabama. It's not like they don't have good players. Bryce Young's probably going to win the Heisman, but it's not because, you know, he just put up gaudy, unbelievable numbers. You look around the country, it's not a great year for the Heisman. But Bill has been a disappointment, and I'm sure everybody out in Houston hates to hear that.
I have a future on Bryce Young, so I hope that you're right, Jake. One more before we let you go. I know championship week to play, but who's your playoff? What's the semifinals?
You know, when I'm looking at it again, I think Houston's got a chance against Cincinnati, by the way. I'm not just saying that. We have a bet on the show that if Cincinnati goes through the regular season and conference championship undefeated, I have to get put in the trash can. If not, then my brother, who's one of our co-hosts, is getting put in the trash can. So I think Houston's got a good shot to beat Cincinnati. But when I look at the playoff, I think Georgia's going to beat Alabama. The biggest question is, if there's carnage in these conference championship games, let's say Cincinnati wins, they're going to be in at the 2, so it'll be Georgia at the 1, Cincinnati at the two. If there's carnage in these playoff games, they're going to in these conference championship games, they're going to find a way to get Notre Dame in. But what I want to see is if that fourth seed ends up being a two-loss team, you can bet your bottom dollar to Little Orphan Annie's house or orphanage or whatever that they're going to find a way to get Bama in.
Jake, I just want to let you know, you're a friend of the show already. We like having you. But the fact that you go over the top appeasing the play-by-play guy for University of Houston basketball, the sideline reporter for Houston football with a comment like that, that's losing a lot of the street cred.
Nah, it's not. It's not. Points in my
book. Know, there's so many topics to hit, man. My question is, you know, when I look at Houston with all the stuff going out there with the program, I know Kelvin Sampson is a hell of a basketball coach, but Houston to me is a gold mine as a football team. You know, I coached and went to South Alabama down there in Mobile, another gold mine, and I'm just waiting to look up 5 to 7 years from now and see Houston being a legitimate problem. I'm just interested to see this Holgorsen situation with Oklahoma, if anything comes of that.
Oh, preach it, Jake!
Jake, your time is up on the show. Jake, great stuff. Appreciate the good comments, too, on Houston. Tell me where to send the check, all right?
Hey, well, look, man, you can just send it to the charity of your choice. I appreciate you guys having me, and anytime y'all need me, just holler at me.
We'll take advantage of that. Jake Crane, one of the best college football podcasts there is, the J-Boy Show podcast, The Volume Sports, and they loop it around, too, so you don't have to listen to two, like Jake had to say, but great guest on the Killer Bees. Why did the Astros let Kendall Graveman walk? That's next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Years of research and innovation.
Innovation Map is the new voice of innovation in Houston.
Pretty cool, huh, Morty?
Covering startups, tech, energy, health, social impact, and more. Visit innovationmap.com today.
Do it now! Do it! Do it! Do it now!